In this week in MMA, we're going to go hard in the paint with our fight night picks for UFC 236. We're also going to recap the weekend that was and really dive into our newest segment, the Twitter Purge. So, let's get into it. You by Spretzbox. Head on over to the website spretzbox.com. All you have to do, click to get started. You can either order one of their boxes that has over $100 in value, or maybe you're interested in a single item like these great socks. So click on them, add them to your cart, head on over to the checkout, and then all you have to do is enter in the promo code FNP as follows here. You'll save 10% off your first box or your complete first order. That's spretzbox.com. Fight Night Picks is brought to you by Strikeforce Energy. Head on over to the website strikeforceenergy.com. If you enjoy the flavor of freedom, the company's veteran-owned and everything's made in America. They've got great apparel. You can turn any 16.9-ounce beverage into an energy drink. There's no sugar, no calories, no stirring, or no shaking required. They also have a line of different products as well as Strikeforce coffee. So if I head into my cart, I've got a 4-count sample pack. I've got a 20-ounce coffee mug. And if I head into that checkout, use the promo code FNP, click to apply, and you're going to save 20% off any order. That's FNP at StrikeForceEnergy.com. All right, so first thing with the show, and basically what we're going to do and what we're going to do from now on, we're going to do a recap of the weekend that was. We're going to preview the week that's coming up. We're going into the Twitter purge, and then we're going to give our highlights and lowlights. So that's going to be basically the structure for the shows moving forward. If we have fighter interviews, if we have other journalists on, we'll pepper those in there. But this week, it's just Matt and I. We've got UFC 236 coming up this weekend. I'm going to be flying to beautiful Regina, Saskatchewan,
Canada.
It's not
very beautiful. I lived there for a while.
Yeah, it's not. But I'm going there Saturday. I don't fly in until 11 p.m., so I'm going to miss quite a bit of the fights. But nonetheless, we're going to preview them. So if we start from the start, if we head back to last weekend, Matt, there wasn't a whole lot in combat sports.
Nothing at all, really.
I threw out the question on Twitter to see what people thought I should focus in on. Majority voted for BKFC. A lot of people told me WrestleMania. I had no stock in WrestleMania, which was on Sunday night. So rather than that, I ended up watching some baseball. But
I saw a grown man refer to himself as the Doctor of Thugonomics during WrestleMania, and I turned it off right after.
Yeah, and I get that. So you had BKFC 5. It was probably the biggest combat sports card of the weekend. No really big boxing cards either. I'm not a big, huge boxing guy either. But if you look at BKFC 5, you had kind of well-known names in Isaac Valley Flag. You had Reginald Barnett Jr. taking on Rusty Crowder. That was a good fight. Biggest fight of the weekend, or biggest fight of this card for me, was Sam Shoemaker taking on Chase Sherman. Reason being, Sam Shoemaker is one of those homegrown type of talents for bare knuckle. And listen, there were a lot of people that basically hated on bare knuckle over the weekend on Twitter. They said it's barbaric. They said there's no place in combat sports for this. But if you go back 10 or 15 years ago when MMA was just starting to kind of go on an uptick, a lot of people said the same things about that. And bare knuckle boxing has been around for way longer than that. You can go back into the Stone Ages, really. People just bare knuckle.
Okay, but you can say the same thing with that with MMA. That doesn't count.
Regardless, as far as this is concerned, Shoemaker's homegrown talent. He's had 4 fights with BKFC. He was taking on Chase Sherman, UFC vet, on an uptick of his own with Island Fights. And it ended up in a split draw. Super, super rare result. It was a really good fight and something that I was looking forward to. He also had Christine Faria taking on Britton Hart. It was a good fight for Faria. She was able to get the TKO in the second round.
Britton Hart's a 1-2 professional boxer with an 0-2 bare knuckle fighting record. So you take that for what it's worth.
Christine Faria had a decent MMA career. She fought quite a bit there.
Knocked out Rachel Ostovich.
Yeah, had a good career in Invicta. Then you had Chris Lieben taking on Justin Baseman. Justin Baseman lost 12 fights in a row. I thought it was ridiculous that this fight came about. It was a 25-second knockout for Chris Lieben, who's looked good against Phil Brony and WBKFF back in the summer.
Poor Phil tried to wrestle him.
This fight against Baseman, at least Chris Lieben's getting paid in this one. And then you had Harris Stevenson taking on Caleb Harris, which was thrown in there because your co-main event was the Lieben fight. They threw this one in there as a swing contest. Listen, I get it. In boxing, sometimes there's swing contests. This was stupid. Yeah. It was a boring fight. It was a split decision win in a 5-rounder.
I tell you what wasn't boring, though.
the main event. Main event was a possible, I know it's bare knuckle, but it was probably a bare knuckle fight of the year.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Artem Lobov, Jason Knight put it all on the line. Artem won a 5-round decision. It was so much fun. Knight dropped Artem early.
Like in the first 10 seconds.
They had each other rocked. They were a little lenient on the knockdowns. There were quite a few. I know they called some slips, but great fight overall. Both guys win in this situation.
I don't think they do. I think Jason Knight's lost 4 MMA fights in a row, and he just lost to Artem Lobov, who doesn't have a lot of respect among them.
Super, super popular, and this also sets up, this is kind of best case scenario for BKFC. It sets them up well as far as media is concerned. They signed Pauly Malignaggi. He's definitely going to be fighting Artem Lobov. Rumor is June 22nd.
It's official. It's not a rumor.
It was thrown out there by Boxing Kingdom, I know, yesterday, Monday.
The people who said that Manny Pacquiao was going to fight Conor
McGregor. Different account. Doesn't matter. But still. So Artem Lobov is going to be taking on Pauly Malignaggi. A lot of people looking forward to that.
Can't wait.
And that was basically your weekend in combat sports. So now if we move ahead and have a look at what we can expect this week.
There we go.
And I've got it up next to me. You got the matchup stats. The first fight with UFC 236. A reminder, you have one championship, Roots of Honor, taking place on Friday. It is a good card because at the top you have Martin Wynn taking on just a legend in the sport. And you go down to your co-main event, Yosuke Tsuruta taking on Joshua Pasillo. That's for the 125 belt. Of course, if you're thinking, well, 125 flyweight, no dice, because you get Demetrius Johnson at flyweight, which is really 135, going to be fighting in that finale for their flyweight Grand Prix. So looking forward to that one. I mean, some other names that you might recognize, Luis Santos, kind of a name at 65-11-1, taking on James Nakashima. Don't sleep on that one. Nakashima 10-0. Other than that, it's a fairly good card. It's not one that I'm going to wake up overly early for, but Martin Wynn is a good crossover star. He's held different belts at different points in his career. He's gone from 135, 145, 155. Yep. So he's been all over the place. This one's for the 155 pound belt. You also have Combate 34 taking place on Friday night, one to look forward to, as well as EFC Worldwide 78 coming at you from Cape Town. And in the main event there, you've got JP Baez taking on Luthando Biko. You also have Jake Hadley taking on Naximulo Zulu at 11-2. So two title fights there, something to look forward to. However, biggest card of the weekend, UFC 236. Matt and I are really looking forward to it.
Fired up.
Apparently, Brandon Davis is going to be fighting a guy in his pro debut. UFC really needs to update their website. But in this one, it's a lot of fun because Costa, so far in his amateur career, 3-0, all finishes. In his pro career, he's 4-0, all of them finishes. If you go over on Tapology, you can check that record out. As far as Brandon Davis is concerned, what can you tell me about Brandon Davis?
He's got a salty record. He has had some decent performances in the UFC. Entry level or low level UFC fighter is kind of the best way to say it. I know he fought Zabidi, looked good in the first round against him. Got submitted by that Sulu stretch. We haven't seen him since. But he's definitely fought better competition. It's just he hasn't beat or been very competitive with that better competition. I assume he'd win this fight by decision, maybe, because I don't know a lot about Randy Costa. But yeah, that's really all I've got. There's not a whole lot you can say about this fight.
No, and I mean, if you have a look at the odds, they're relatively close right now. Brandon Davis, a minus 165 favorite in this one. Costa, I think, is a good pick at a plus 140. I think it makes a lot of sense. A lot of finishes. He's been really, really active as a professional as well. So he's my pick. I'm going with Costa, but apparently, according to the UFC, he has no arms or legs.
And that's going
to
hurt him in this fight.
He's never fought. That could hurt him a little bit. In our next fight, you've got Lauren Mueller taking on Pollyanna Botelho. Lauren Mueller at 6-1. She's looked great at 125.
No, she hasn't.
I think she's somebody at 125 that could make a move just because the division's kind of stacked up a little bit more recently, but I think she slots in as maybe a 10-15 type of fighter.
I could not disagree more. If you watch her first two fights in the UFC, she fought Shayna Dobson, and she definitely lost that fight, but they gave her the split decision. And then in her last fight, I can't remember exactly who it was against, but she did lose. She is slow on the feet. She doesn't have very good wrestling. Her jiu-jitsu is non-existent. It feels like she's getting a push by the UFC just because she was on Tuesday Night Contenders, and that she was kind of one of the mainstays of that show, I guess. But yeah, she's going to lose this fight. Laura Mueller, she's pushed a lot, but she's not a very good fighter.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that last loss to Wu Yan Nan, And then if you have a look at Battaglio, she lost her last fight to Cynthia Calvillo. That's understandable. Before that, wins over Pearl Gonzalez and Siri Kondo. And we've seen Kondo kind of get a little bit better as 2018 rolled around. So,
but I mean, she knocked her with a body kick and it was actually really nice.
It was really nice. If you have a look at the odds, Mueller plus 150, somewhere around there. Battaglio at a minus 175. And Matt, I think you talked me out of it. I'm going to take the favorite in this one in Battaglio.
Mueller's very boxing-oriented, but she's not fast. Like, you don't have to throw a lot of kicks. You just have to have phenomenal... Like, okay, Kelvin Gastelum, we're going to talk about later. He doesn't really throw kicks. It just, his hands are so good, it doesn't really matter. And she doesn't have really that aspect
yet. Moving into the next fight, and I tossed it out there on Twitter, asked what potential fight of the night could be. Nobody came out and said this one,
because
but
it's not going to be.
I can see this fight being a lot of fun between Montel Jackson taking on Andrei Sukumtoth. Of course, Sukumtoth has looked good since he fought that terrible fight against Sean O'Malley. I mean, just zero fight IQ. He was highly criticized. He came back, kind of pushed back against it, able to get back into the win column. And Montel Jackson with the win over Brian Kelleher really, really impressed me. Yep. I had Kelleher in that fight.
Montel's going to win this fight easy.
Montel Jackson has a crazy reach for the division at 75 and a half inches. I know you might not want to put a lot of stat, you know, you might not want to push too much into
well,
it.
Though.
He uses the range really well, and both guys stand-up oriented fighters. I know Jackson got the submission in that one, but
I mean, we saw in that fight he dropped Kelleher with those elbows in the clinch. Yeah. I mean, Montel Jackson is going to win this without much resistance, I think. I don't think this will be a fight of the night. I think it's more performance of the night material than anything.
It's a lot of fun, and it's an interesting one if you're a gambler, because Montel Jackson's a minus 500 right now, and you can get Andrei Sukumtoth at anywhere from a plus 415 to a plus 350. It's if you're into the gambling,
which I am. And
it's
I
juicy.
Don't think that
it's those are juicy odds in this fight.
It's as dry as a bone.
I agree with you though. I'm taking Montel Jackson in this fight.
Now this fight is compelling for two reasons, and I don't mean to cut you off, Craig, but basically these guys' strengths are the other guys' weaknesses. Curtis Millender does not have a ground game. I don't know if he knows what jiu-jitsu is. I don't know if he's ever seen wrestling before. He's terrible on the ground, but if he can keep the fight standing, Curtis Millender is a MF-er to deal with. He's got phenomenal kicks. His striking's really good. He doesn't have ridiculous power, but he can definitely set people up and kind of set traps to get knockouts. We saw that in the Thiago Alves fight. Curtis Millender's shown on the feet kind of like these spots of brilliance. But again, his wrestling is non-existent. He has no ground game. We saw that with Elysio Zaleski dos Santos, who is a good grappler, but he's definitely stand-up oriented. I mean, he rocked Millender with a left hook, hit him with a clean body kick, took him down and choked him out, and it was one of the easier fights of his career. Bilal Muhammad, on the other hand, his striking's okay. It's not great by any means, but he's a really good wrestler. He's a grinder, too. He's kind of like a small Corey Anderson, it reminds me of. He's not going to get a lot of finishes. He's not going to wow you with a lot of his style, but he's just a grinder. He's got phenomenal cardio. He's got really good wrestling, and he uses those to his advantage.
And the good thing with Bilal Muhammad, kind of a neat stat, the fact that he fought in June of last year, got a win over Chance Rencounter, fasting during Ramadan throughout his training camp. So insane stat there. At that point, that capped a four-fight win streak. Wins over Rude Boy, Randy Brown, the Canadian Jordan, me, and Tim Means. And then Rencounter losing to the Hands of Steel, Jeff Neal, which worries me because, like you said, Jeff Neal's a real stand-up-oriented type of fighter. Kind of the same thing with Millender. And when Millender came into the UFC, I was super, super high on him. You looked at all the wins that he had in LFA. Comes in with that great finish win over Thiago Alves. Then it's a win over Max Griffin, who has great boxing. A win over Ciar Bahadurzada, which wasn't actually much of a fun fight because Bahadurzada kind of faded, which I was surprised. Millender's the type of guy, big frame at 170. You have to kind of worry about cardio, especially with a guy like Bilal Muhammad, who doesn't seem to really tire too much and has great wrestling. But like you said, to your point, that rear naked choke loss to Zaleski dos Santos, and he's good all over the place.
Exactly.
And you know, he's finally getting the recognition he deserves with his ranking. But yeah, this for me is a tough fight to pick. If you look at the odds, they're pretty damn close. Millender's a slight underdog at like a plus 105, around 100. Muhammad is somewhere around minus 135, minus 130.
I'm taking Muhammad.
I would take Muhammad as well.
We saw Muhammad can get hurt on the feet. I mean, Jeff Neal dropped a couple times. Vicente Luque knocked him out. The difference is Luque has a ground game, so he can defend against what Bilal's good at. Jeff Neal has good takedown defense, so he can just keep up to his feet. If Millender doesn't knock him out in the first minute, maybe... Bilal's just going to take him down and kind of grind on him for three rounds. It won't be the most exciting fight in the world, but it's definitely going to be a good fight for Bilal Muhammad, I think. If you're betting, those are good odds for him, too.
Yeah, exactly. And as we move along into the prelims, you got Boston Solomon making his UFC debut. He's been gone for a long time, going to win on the Contender Series, and we haven't seen him. Taking on Khalid Taha, a guy with Team UFD. Huge gym. As far as KSW is concerned, a lot of big stars fighting out of UFD. Demir Hadzovic is one guy in the UFC that I can think of off the top of my head that also trains there. So keep an eye on that gym because ATT, a lot of the American gyms, SBG, they get a lot of the shine, TriStar up here in Canada. But Team UFD, if you can go through their roster, it's a lot of fun to have a look there. And as far as this fight's concerned, like you said, you know, Boston Solomon's been gone for the longest time. A lot of people probably won't even recognize him, really.
Yeah, he was on the first season of Contender Series 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So not last summer, but the summer before. And he hasn't fought since. He was scheduled for a few fights. He was hurt. And now he's making his return. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how he looks with all this time off.
And also interesting, too, this fight was originally scheduled for November. It ended up being canceled. They rebooked it. If you have a look at, let's have a look at Khalid Taha. He had fights in Ryzen and a win and a loss. He got a win over Hamza Kuheji in Brave, and everybody loves Brave. Then he came into the UFC, and I knew who Khalid Taha was. Comes in against Nad Nerimani, former Cage Warriors champ. Gets beaten in a decision. It was a fun fight, but Nerimani definitely won it. And then as far as Boston Solomon's concerned, for some reason, he got on Contender Series with a split decision loss in RFA back when it was RFA. Took a year before we saw him. Now it's been almost 2 years since the last time that he fought.
Yeah.
That's really, really tough, especially a guy that's, you know, coming off decision win from Contender Series.
Don't bet on that fight.
And somehow Boston Solomon's a favorite. I don't get it. I would avoid it like the plague, but personally, I'm going to be taking Khalid Taha in this fight.
I will too, but again, I would put money on this fight.
Now,
when
we move into the next fight, this is the one that personally, when I threw out that tweet, I had the main and the co-main as possible fight of the nights. And then this one in my head, old Craig was doing you dirty. And I threw this one out and said, this could be a fight of the night. Reason being, Max Payne Griffin, his damn record lately isn't great, but his boxing is really great. Mm-hmm. He's a fun fighter to watch. And Zalim Imadiev is a great fighter to watch. You look at his record. He's only 24 years old. All of his wins are knockout wins at 8-0, coming in, making his UFC debut. And it's a big guy to take on in your UFC debut. Max Griffin, in his last fight, we were talking about it before the show, fought back in February. It was a split decision loss to Thiago Alves. A lot of people, myself included, thought that he beat Alves in that fight.
It was a great fight.
And then if you look through his UFC record, losses to Colby Covington, Eliseu Zaleski dos Santos, and Curtis Millender, and then the Alves one. So really good competition, top guys to lose to, realistically. And Zalim Imadiev, I mean, this is a tough fight coming in. He's a Fight Nights Global type of guy. And if you look at his last fights,
hasn't fought in over a year.
Yeah, he fought three times in 2017. All finishes. He fought once in 2018, a finish. He was originally scheduled to have a fight back at Fight Nights Global 90 in October. Had to cancel, pull out due to injury. Him and his opponent did, so he's making his UFC debut here. Kind of smart that he waited a little bit. And the thing that kind of scares me about this fight, too, is as far as the odds are concerned, they're par. So it's basically a pick 'em in this one. I have Imadiev, just based on previous track record, I don't see him as a really top guy, because as soon as he faces a UFC wrestler, he's going to be screwed.
Yeah,
but fighting a mid-tier boxer, I think he's going to be able to get the win.
The thing that worries me about Max Griffin is, I know we say that he probably should have won that Thiago Alves fight. He still took a lot of damage in that fight.
Yep.
I mean, he dropped Alves. He got wobbled by Alves. It's a lot of damage to come back, and that fight was 2 months ago. So you got to worry about if he's kind of fully recovered, your brain health and whatnot. But you know what? I'll take Max Griffin.
Matt's taking Max Griffin, and we move on to our next fight.
Don't bet on that fight either, though.
A fight that is just kind of silly, and it's at 125. You got Wilson Hayes, former title challenger, taking on Alexander Pantoja. Pantoja's looked good in his UFC career. Wilson Hayes has looked bad in his recent UFC career.
Wilson Hayes has never looked good in the UFC. He's the most overrated fighter in UFC history, and I'll tell you this, because Wilson Hayes got a title shot off beating Uka Sasaki, who's never been ranked at flyweight before.
Wilson Hayes, the most overrated fighter in UFC history.
Look at his record. He's beat Dustin Ortiz, Hector Sandoval, Uka Sasaki, that got him a title shot. None of those guys are all that top level. I know outside the UFC, a lot of people consider him to be the best flyweight, but once you get in, he hasn't looked good in the UFC. He's like the David Branch of the flyweight division. On the other hand, Pantoja, he's looked pretty good. I know he lost to Jose Formiga. He's looked pretty good ever since. I think a Pantoja should win this fight.
Yeah, Matt with the scatterbrain there. I think Pantoja should be able to win this
Wilson
fight.
Wilson Hayes is overrated.
Wilson Hayes has decent wrestling, decent striking. He's a well-rounded
amazing
guy.
Amazing jiu-jitsu.
Pantoja does most of those things better than him. And for that reason, I'm taking Pantoja as well. If you're curious about those odds, Wilson Hayes at a plus 130, Pantoja minus 155. So decent odds there. I understand them. But yeah, for us to both pick Pantoja, I totally get it.
Next fight's a fun one.
The next fight is a fun one between the Tarantula, Jalen Turner, taking on Matt the Steamroller Frivola. And Frivola with that crazy draw in his last fight when he fought Groovy Lando Venata.
Crazy fight.
It was a fun fight.
I thought he lost it, but still, it was a good
fight. I thought he lost it too. And for Jalen Turner, the Tarantula, a guy who trains out of Ruka Sport, guys like who? I mean, Perilla's the head coach. You've got Chris Cyborg there. You've got RDA. Bisping always trained there. So it's kind of interesting that they have a 23-year-old Jalen Turner, a guy who is a freak of nature at
6'3". The UFC did him dirty, too, in his UFC debut. I mean, they made him fight Vicente Luque, who is an absolute monster in a weight division. He probably does belong in, because I think lightweight must kill him to make. But in his last fight, I mean, he looked phenomenal.
Yeah, he beat Callum Potter, a guy who finally got his due in his UFC debut, a guy who had really toiled around, and not maybe the minor leagues, but a guy who had been around with multiple different fighting organizations, finally got the shot. He was 17-7 at the time. And as far as Matt Frivola is concerned, we know he's a good wrestler. Didn't really get to show that off in his last fight.
He's got good striking, too.
He does have half-decent striking. And if we have a look down through his record just quickly, I mean, 6-1-1, you look at the fights before his UFC debut against Polo Reyes, and then of course he had the Venata fight, so it was a knockout loss in a minute against Polo Reyes. Wins over Jose Flores, Raush Manafino, and then he had a whole bunch of canceled fights at one point in 2015, including one with Mike Perry, Perry. And he's a guy, of course, it says that he trains out of Gracie Tampa South. It was a good fight against Lando Venata, but I just see Jalen Turner winning this one, unless Matt Frivola really overpowers him with the wrestling. He didn't really get a chance to do it with Venata. Jalen Turner is such a long guy. All he has to do is kind of run around the cage, and the odds are pretty darn close. They're almost par with Turner at about a minus 120 right now. Frivola, minus 110. Are you picking Turner in this
one? I'm picking Turner too, and as I'm looking at it, I don't think a terrible parlay to do would be to do Turner and not Curtis Miller and Bilal Muhammad. Put those two together because the odds are semi-even. It should be a pretty one-sided fight for both of them.
So we finally move into our main card. Your first fight on the main card. You've got OSP just eating it, and you've got him taking on Nikita Krylov.
Who's more inconsistent between the two?
So Matt and I have talked about this fight for like weeks, and it's interesting because I love to watch OSP fight. I also love to watch Nikita Krylov fight.
You also never know how good either guy's going to be because they either look like a world champion or the worst fighter you've ever seen.
Yeah, Nikita Krylov was a guy when he was fighting over in Fight Nights Global. I was just hoping that he would come back to the UFC.
Look great when he came back.
Hoping and praying and wishing and wanting, and he didn't.
No, Jan Blachowicz beat the brakes off him.
Finally, he came back, fights Jan Blachowicz, and has a terrible, terrible fight. He didn't look good. Like
mollywop.
Fight went to the ground, which is one of his strengths, and then it just looked like he had no idea what he was doing. OSP, super inconsistent, a lot of big wins. He seems to get rocked, and as soon as he gets rocked, he gets dropped. And then when he gets dropped, he gets in a bad position. And all of a sudden, he flips the switch, gets out of the bad position, and throws up a straight arm lock against Tyson Pedro.
Or he just gets dropped and then knocked out. Or submitted. We've seen that happen many times, too.
Exactly. So OSP, super, super inconsistent. It's really tough to bet. As far as the odds are concerned in this one, Krylov, you know what? It's basically a pick-up.
Yeah, I take OSP in this fight, and I say this for this reason. Nikita Krylov's slow. He's a fast starter, but in a weird way. He's a fast starter, but he needs to connect with something, and then he starts to get going. But for the first, like, minute and a half, he's very tentative, I guess. OSP, if he can just hammer those kicks in there, OSP is a really powerful athlete.
His body kicks are probably phenomenal. One of his number one attributes. That and his BJJ, those two.
But his BJJ is very inconsistent, too. It's not like he's a guy who, he's like Damian Maya or like Brian Ortega. He needs top position to really use his jiu-jitsu effectively. I would say OSP by TKO in this fight. I think he's going to be able to land with his big body kicks. Nikita Krylov also works good at kicking range. I just don't think he has the speed that OSP does. So I think OSP is going to win either by decision or stoppage in like the third round. Krylov doesn't have cardio.
Interesting to note, too, the wins that Krylov had. And he left the UFC to pursue other opportunities. I know it was on a loss, but he left pretty much on his own volition.
He fought some nobodies.
He also fought Emmanuel Newton.
Who's 93.
Late in his career. And Fabio Maldonado. So really, those wins don't mean a whole hell of a lot. Comes back, fights ranked Jan Blachowicz. He was ranked before he left. But, it's a battle of the two really inconsistent fighters. And I'm going to pick OSP as well. But if you're a gambler, do not bet on that one. The next one, Matt thinks it could be a possible fight of the night. I mean, Dwight Grant is a guy that had one of the worst fights I've ever seen ever.
And then almost murdered a man in his last fight.
And then looked great in his last fight. And Al Joban, a guy who speaks incredibly well on his podcast with Karen Bryant. And he's a half-decent fighter, too, at 16-6.
Oh, half-decent. Yeah, he's okay.
He's fun to watch. So if we have a look at Alan Joban's record, like I said, 16-6. Not necessarily inconsistent lately because he had losses to Gunnar Nelson and Nico Price. Two really, really good fighters. Gets a win over Ben Saunders back early last year. We haven't seen him since. Dwight Grant got a win in his last fight. It's crazy that he's 34 because he looks like he's 24. But got a great win against Carlo Pedersoli where he threw up, like, what was it, a last-second punch?
No, yeah, Pedersoli went for a head kick, and when his head was, like, down here and his foot was over, Grant, like, ducked and threw an overhead. Hit Pedersoli's mouth guard out of his mouth, and then just hit him in the last.
I thought it was the end of the round, but it was not.
Stopped him though because he blasted him with that punch.
Dwight Grant's a guy that his wrestling's good, his striking's good, and also if you have a look
at his wrestling's not great though.
If you have a look at those metrics, he typically has a reach advantage. He's got a 3-inch leg reach advantage. He's got almost about 4.5 inches of reach on him, and I mean Dwight Grant has looked great except for that Zach Otto fight, which could have gone either way, except for the fans' way. Don't go back and watch it. I'm taking Dwight Grant in this one. We haven't seen Alan Joban in a really long time. He's coming off a win over Ben Saunders, which means nothing
Ben's
to me.
Ben's got a chin of Grant.
Means nothing to me.
I think Alan Joban wins this fight. I think he's going to win by TKO in the second.
And it's worth noting, Matt's a really big Alan Joban guy.
I'm not. I just think I was going with Dwight Grant for a lot of it. But thinking back to the Zach Otto fight, Dwight Grant does slow down later on. He can't keep a crazy high pace either, and he does have good power, but the only people who bother Joban are people with like murderous power, and I just don't think he has it.
So if we take a look at the next fight on the card, you've got Eric Anders taking on Khalil Roundtree. Anders real big 205 debut, if you want to call it that. Of course, he had the fight against
fact, did you know he once played for the Alabama Crimson Tide? I never did. UFC shows too many of those promos.
Either way, Eric Anders at one point, he was a long time middleweight. He had that fight against Thiago Santos on short notice in Brazil, main event. Good to get a main event, but yeah, tough fight. And then after that, he fought Elias Theodoru to a split decision loss at UFC 231 back in December. So trying to get back on the horse against the war horse in Khalil Roundtree, who's a guy that's incredibly inconsistent. A lot of inconsistent fighters on this card, but he's a guy that came into the UFC from season 23, The Ultimate Fighter, wins over Daniel Jolly, Paul Craig, and then he had a no contest, Michael Olex.
The guy who beat
Ola Chaychuk. I had to remember that. I had the note on this table, if only a couple days ago. I just threw it out. And he lost that fight. Then he came back, fought Gokhan Saki. Everybody picked Gokhan Saki to win until Gokhan Saki's not an MMA fighter anymore and lost that fight. And then he had that insane loss to Johnny Walker because they fed him to the wolves in that one.
Well, also, no one knew how good Johnny Walker was at that time.
So, in this fight, you've got Eric Anders, who's going to be primarily a wrestler. I put two words together.
Don't think he will be, but continue.
Against Khalil Roundtree, who is a hard puncher, if you want to say that.
Big power puncher.
But that's pretty much all he's got. I mean, he looks like one of those early 1900s guys that got into bodybuilding. Yeah. This is a fight that if I really had to make a fight night picks, I wouldn't. But, I mean, Anders is a minus 200 and Khalil Roundtree a plus 160. I think Khalil Roundtree is going to win. Eric Anders is susceptible to eating shots. And Khalil Roundtree, unless he tires out, I think he's going to be able to get the finish.
The only people who have been able to land really well on Eric Anders were Lyoto Machida and Thiago Santos. Guys who land on everybody who have insane stand-up.
And I thought Eric Anders won that fight against Lyoto
Machida.
Yeah, but
he didn't. So, Khalil Roundtree has a puncher's chance, but I do think Craig's right with the wrestling aspect. I think Eric Anders might hurt him early with the hands, take him down, TKO ground pound first round.
Get him with the hands!
And that'll be it for Khalil. He'll get cut if he loses, though.
In your co-main event, a possible fight of the night between number four, Kelvin Gastelum, who was all but, well, he was guaranteed a title shot.
He was.
Incredibly recently, until Robert Whittaker was pulled at the last hour due to a hernia.
Yeah, his guts.
And Israel Adesanya went out that night, covered in the main event, got the win over Anderson Silva in what some consider to be an all-time great fight.
Yeah, those people have brain damage.
It was fun, but it wasn't that good. But still, Adesanya Gastelum. Adesanya's going to have a huge reach advantage in this one, a great big leg reach. And it's funny because he's a kickboxer, and he knows how to use that incredibly well. Now, we've gone back and forth about this fight on air between ourselves. I think Gastelum, if he's going to win, he's got to get in close. I think if Adesanya's going to win, he's got to do what he does well, keep range. And it's such a hard fight to pick because Gastelum does have a good ground game. Go back and watch the Jacare fight, which it was close.
He got mauled on the ground for the first
round. It was close. It was really close. But still, he got out of those tough positions against one of the best grapplers of all time. And he can kind of dish it as well. He's working out with Kings MMA. A lot of great fighters from there. And Adesanya, of course, main training partner with Dan Hooker, but there's a whole cast and crew of Anzac fighters. This is a lot of fun as a fight. If you have a look at the odds, they're pretty close. Adesanya minus 170 favorite, Gastelum around a plus 140. He came out and said in the last couple of days, I'm always an underdog, I don't really care about it. Who's your pick in this fight?
So, like Craig said, I've gone back and forth just like he has. Originally, I thought Kelvin Gastelum was going to starch him, starch Israel pretty quickly. But going back, I think Israel's going to win. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is a boring fight. I think this is either going to be fight of the night or the worst fight of the night. Only for this. I think Kelvin could hurt him early. Kelvin might hurt Israel early. And Israel's just going to keep range after that pot shot for 4.5 rounds. It's not going to be overly entertaining. Or the opposite's going to happen. Israel's going to hurt Kelvin, stay at range, and hit him with some big shots. And then at rounds like 3 through 5, Kelvin's going to start to get a second wind. He's going to wrestle a little bit more. Maybe that's going to wear on Israel. He's going to start landing big shots, and it's going to be a fun fight. But if I had to pick what I think is most likely, I think Israel's going to win a fairly boring decision.
I think Israel's going to win as well.
Kelvin's got a crazy chin.
Kelvin's got a really good chin, and I never bet against chins until they falter, and that always comes to my detriment. But hey, I mean, that's just the way the pick game goes. I'm taking Adesanya as the favorite in this one. But listen, I mean, if you want to go Team Gastelum, I threw it around in my head for quite a while and let it settle. But I just think Adesanya's too much for him. I will say, and Matt, it's kind of funny, we talked about this before the show, but there's such negative sentiment against people who just rise up to the occasion so quick.
Yeah.
A la Johnny Walker, Israel Adesanya, some of the new blood that we've seen recently. Even Macy Barber has her fair share.
The difference is she doesn't fight any good fighters.
Detractors. Yep, exactly. She's just getting the start of that climb. I mean, she's only had a couple fights in the UFC so far.
Still, the regardless, the competition between her and guys like Israel Adesanya are very different.
Matt trying to argue me my point and just waiting to hear me out. There's a lot of detractors about these people that rise really quickly. And listen, I've been a hater before too, but I really think Israel Adesanya is the real deal. He's going to be a guy that people are going to have to contend with in the UFC in this division for a long time. And if he can get his wrestling and his ground game just even on a par level, he's going to be a superstar if he isn't already.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's got all the makings to be the next, you know, Conor McGregor-esque type fighter. I know that the UFC had a lot of stock in Darren Till to kind of be that guy. He's faltered in his recent fights, but yeah, if Israel can keep on going. Problem is, though, you have such a big mountain to climb if you win this. You have to fight Robert Whittaker, who doesn't get the respect he deserves because he had 2 close fights with Yoel Romero. They're pretty much equals. The only people who can beat them are each other. You're telling me that Israel Adesanya is going to run through Robert Whittaker? You're batshit insane if you think that. Whittaker does everything amazing. He's good at everything. He doesn't get tired. He hits like a truck. He's got phenomenal jiu-jitsu and wrestling. So no matter who wins that interim title fight, they have such a big hill to climb in that main event when they fight Robert Whittaker. It's not even funny.
So, our main event. And another possible fight of the night.
No, this is fight of the night. I don't think it's an argument.
Yeah, you got the 10th Island. It's coming to Hotlanta.
Every island's the 10th
Island. Bless taking on the Diamante. And Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier. Finally, Dustin Poirier gets his due. He gets a title fight. And he's taking on one of the best of all time, regardless of weight class. Yeah. But arguably the best of all time at 145. You can make a case for Jose Aldo. You can certainly make that case for Max Holloway. You can't make that case for Conor McGregor. You hear me? You can't. Either way, Holloway taking on Dustin Poirier. Yes, they fought before. Poirier had one of the slickest transitions I've ever seen.
Alberta.
It was so nice to a triangle choke. It was great. Max Holloway was 20 years old. Fast forward to today. Max Holloway, well-rounded everywhere. The fight I want to see is Max Holloway, Tony Ferguson, because it's like carbon copies of each other fighting. But still, Dustin Poirier, great ground game, awesome power, and we've seen him just gain on his stand-up since he's been at 155. And in these really high-pressure, high-profile fights that he's had, he's really shown that ability.
He's huge, too.
He's huge. You look at the fight against Pettis, and he looked great. Obviously, rib injury ended that one. They're showing it in the highlight reels, but pretty much it was his knee on his rib, and it cracked.
Still, though,
it was a good fight.
Yeah.
The fights against Eddie Alvarez, he looked really good. And Max Holloway, what can I say? I mean, go back and watch Brian Ortega. That was a fight of the year type fight. It was so, so good. Holloway and Poirier, it's a great one. Holloway's a fairly big favorite. He's a little bit more than a 2-1 in this one. For me, throwing it around in my head, it's kind of a pick'em to me. It really, really is. It's a tough one to call. There's so many different ways that Poirier can win. Max Holloway just has to apply the pressure if he's going to win. I don't think Holloway's going to get a finish in this one. If he's going to win, it's going to be a decision. And if it's a decision, it's going to be one of those just giving it to him power type of decision wins where it's overwhelming. If Poirier's going to win, it's got to be another finish. I don't know if he's going to be able to get the knockout. We're going to have to wait till later on this week to see what Max looks like. You always have questions about the weight cut. He is going to be cutting weight for this one. Even though he's moving up, he's going to be cutting a significant amount of weight. But he has said that he's gained a lot more muscle and mass, which is a great thing if you're a Holloway fan, because that's going to add to the power of that double jab and everything else that he throws at you. So, Matt, what's your pick in this one?
These are my two favorite fighters of all time. And you can agree. Like,
oh, yeah.
I have man crushes on both of these guys.
Oh, yeah.
Neither guy is a boring fight. Both guys have pretty much unlimited cardio. The difference is Max Holloway has historic cardio. Dustin Poirier wouldn't get tired if he fought anyone else except Max Holloway. Max Holloway puts this pace, puts a pressure on you like no other fighter. And if you lose the first round against Max Holloway, you're never going to win. It just gets worse and worse and worse. You see in a lot of Holloway fights, especially in 5-round fights, guys have success early on. But in a Floyd Mayweather way, I guess, he downloads exactly what you're doing. He's going to figure it out. And by the end of the second round, when you start to breathe a little heavy, he just never stops. So there might be fighters who are better than him to start the fight. There might be guys who are here and Holloway's here. But by the third round, it's like this. Holloway just doesn't get tired. It's insane. And his pressure ramps up as the fight goes on.
His fight style is like the total opposite of Kamaru Usman. But they do one thing very similarly. It's just, it's almost like an exponential curve. It just goes straight up.
Yes.
It doesn't matter how those guys start in the first round. I don't care about it. It's kind of like a Jeremy Stephens, better. Surprisingly. He actually does statistically do that as well.
He does, but if Stephens doesn't land the big punch, he's never winning a decision.
But Max Holloway, to your point, greatest of all time at 145. He can cement his spot as one of the best fighters of all time with a win here. And then if he's able to unify that belt finally against Khabib, because we were supposed to see that on short notice, UFC 223.
He's the best ever. I don't care.
He's one of the best ever. GSP is my top of the Mount Rushmore, but still.
If Max Holloway beats Dustin Poirier, Khabib, and Tony, he's the greatest fighter of all time.
Yeah.
Okay. He needs those three names, though. Right now, he's getting there.
So,
I think, pains me to say this because I love Dustin Poirier, Max Holloway's going to run over Dustin Poirier in this fight. And I never thought I'd say this. I don't think this fight will be competitive. I think the first round will be. I think Dustin has ungodly power. And if he can land something big on Holloway early on, he can knock him out. Dustin Poirier could knock a horse out. The difference is Max Holloway's never out of position. He's never in a place to really get hit clean. He gets hit, don't get me wrong, he'll brawl with you, but he only does that when he knows that he can't get hurt by you. So when your cardio starts to fade, and you're breathing heavy, that's when he'll kind of put it on you. The only problem is, and we saw in the Justin Gaethje fight, Justin Gaethje wears on people. And it's, you know, he can knock you out with one punch. We saw that in his last two fights. But it's, I'm going to kick your leg. I'm going to hurt your body. I'm going to hurt your head. Dustin Poirier somehow fought 15 minutes with Justin Gaethje, checked a leg kick, and knocked him out with one punch. So Poirier, again, he can knock anyone out at any point of the fight. It's just Max Holloway has one of the best chins we've ever seen, the best cardio I've ever seen, the best output I've ever seen, the best striking defense I've ever seen. He does everything almost perfect. If Max Holloway can starch Dustin Poirier, I would have him as the favorite against Khabib Nurmagomedov. My final pick, Dustin Poirier, third round TKO.
Matt just gave you all that info about Max Holloway just to say, hey, I'm picking Dustin Poirier. I'm taking Max Holloway.
I just said Max Holloway, third round TKO.
I think you just said Dustin Poirier.
No, I didn't. I'm 100% sure I said Max Holloway, third round TKO.
We'll have to run back the tape.
And that pains me to say.
Either way, I'm taking Holloway. I think it's going to be a 5-round decision.
Dustin Poirier could take him down and strangle him, though. Like, this fight's so close, it's not even funny.
Complete uptick, I think, in performance. That's why Holloway is going to win this one. And before we move on to our newest and most favorite segment, I have to give a shout-out to Tommy Toehold. You were talking about Justin Gaethje. He called him a human weeble wobble. I laughed so hard. So thank you for that. And now let's get into the Twitter purge.
It's time for the Twitter purge.
All right. So welcome to the newest segment of the show. We're having a lot of fun with it. We've got a new graphic and a new intro. And as far as the Twitter purge is concerned, we're just kind of taking a look back at things that have happened recently, fights that have been announced, all sorts of great stuff. And we started the show with a recap of the weekend, BKFC 5. So I ordered it. It was $29.99 up here. I enjoyed it. I had fun. I covered when I had the Dialogue radio show throughout the summer into the winter. We did a bare knuckle miniseries. We had Christina Marks, Tony Lopez, Jeff Houston, who you would have seen on the weekend. It was a lot of fun, and I got really into the sport. So, with that being said, obviously, WBKFF really screwed everyone over, didn't pay anyone. BKFC has shown that they're a legitimate organization.
Have they? Because when you're owner and seat president, whatever.
Matt, so, from this past weekend, production value was there. We had the stare down between Pauly Malignaggi and Artem Lobov, which was just kind of setting things up, I guess. They got people interested, and I saw a lot more interest in this card than I've seen since their very first card. So they did a good job promoting it. As far as the venue was concerned, small place, a lot of people there. You look at who they had on the team, Antonio Tarver. If you're not a boxing fan, maybe you're a movie fan. He was in Rocky. Balboa, so that's kind of where people know him from. Chris Lytle was an analyst. You also had Sean Wheelock, who does a great job with all sorts of different organizations. So, in one of those fights, and I had mentioned earlier the Barnett fight, he wins a decision, and due to the fact that his opponent, listen, it wasn't a great fight. It was kind of a boring fight, but at least it was competitive. Dave Feldman hops into the cage. He's the president of Bare Knuckle FC and says that we want action. We demand action from the fighters, and said he's going to take 50% of opponent Rusty Crowder's purse because he didn't fight.
First of all, that's illegal. You can't do that if it's in your contract. Second, or just keep on going.
Crap. Which Bare Knuckle FC came out and said after the fact, no money was taken from the opponent. I will say, after the fight, between fights, they went backstage talking to Reggie Barnett, and they said, how do you feel that you got 50% of the purse? I thought Reggie's going to say, hey, I'm going to give it back, just like Artem Lobov, Michael Johnson. Hey, you missed weight? I'll give it back. Reggie said, no, that's great. I get 50% of his money. That's awesome. I get more money.
Yeah, 50% of $150 isn't much, Craig. They're not paying these guys millions.
They backtracked on it, which made them look even worse. And realistically, I mean, BKFC was a good event, but I know a lot of fans and a lot of people out there. I asked a question on Twitter. It's Divided Combat Sports Fans. Do you like it, or is it too much? 50% exactly at a 107 said that they love it. 13 say they hate it. And 37 say they couldn't care less. Matt, what did you think of the event? You didn't watch it, I know.
No, I did see some highlights, and I did watch the Lobov night fight. Some aspects were really entertaining. I understand, and I know that you brought up that people kind of talked about this way negatively about MMA 10 or 15 years ago. The difference was, and is, MMA still had very skilled guys in it 10 or 15 years ago. And maybe BKFC will eventually get more money to pay these guys. They have more well-rounded athletes. They have higher-level athletes. But right now, they've got washed-up MMA fighters, retired MMA fighters, guys who got cut from UFC, Bellator. They just don't have that good a competition right now. I could not care less about Bare Knuckle. And the problem is, I know like Joe Rogan and Eddie Bravo have been going on forever about how fighting without gloves is safer. Also, if you screw your hands up in a sport that you're only allowed to use your hands, your career is over. These guys don't have any protection on their hands.
The problem with it is, and we covered this at length in the Dialogue miniseries, you have to be smart about where you're going to punch. So you have to throw a lot more body shots. You can't throw a bare fist into somebody's forehead and not expect your hand to break.
Yeah, you've got about five full power punches.
Your hands aren't designed to punch like that. No. They really aren't. So it's, you gotta fight smart, and you see these schlubs that just come out of nowhere. They go into this and they're just brawling. Yes. I mean, they just go into it with zero bare knuckle boxing experience. Maybe they took some boxing classes.
Zero boxing experience.
Maybe they've got some MMA experience, but there's some people on these cards that it just doesn't make any sense why they're on these cards. I will say, and I said from the outset, Sam Shoemaker is one of those good stories, a bare knuckle guy. Bobby Riz, if you go through and look at his career, he's one of those original bare knuckle boxers. There are some
out
there.
They're called bar fighters, Craig.
And they're starting to gain more. Christine Ferreira really could be a star of it. We've seen Beck Rawlings come into this. And we've seen Beck Rawlings come into this and kind of make her mark and reinvent her career, reinvigorate her career. But there's a lot of fighters that just should not be doing this. And Matt made a great point of saying with the hands, this is a sport where you need to use your hands. Think if we went back 25 years and Floyd Mayweather learned how to do this. Floyd Mayweather's career would have lasted a year because he breaks his damn hands all the damn time.
Exactly, that's the problem.
So fighters have to be smarter. There were some fighters in this that threw body shots, but realistically, there weren't a whole lot of it. And let's move on to another boxing topic, Matt.
There you go.
So, Floyd Mayweather signed with Ryzen at the tail end of last year, mm-hmm. had an exhibition baloney fight against Tenshin Nasukawa.
It was real, bro.
It was announced by the president of Ryzen that they had signed Manny Pacquiao to some sort of deal. It hasn't been really released yet if it's just going to be a promotional contract, if he's going to fight Tenshin. Poor Tenshin. And I think Tenshin...
Let Tenshin throw kicks if you're going
to
do this.
The smartest thing for Tenshin is to take these fights. If they're thrown, they're thrown. But Tenshin gets paid and it gets name recognition.
But still, did you see his last fight when he cartwheel kicked the guy?
Yeah.
Tenshin's a kicker.
He's so good.
Let him kick people.
His boxing's really, really good too. But a good move by Ryzen.
Box Manny Pacquiao.
They're getting that name recognition. And he's a guy in the Philippines that's huge. So now you're moving from Japan to the Philippines. You're making a bigger reach. And it's a great signing overall.
I think it is. And even if it is one of those things like Rumble Johnson with bare knuckle fighting where he's not actually actively competing, he's more just an advocate for the sport, that helps too. So I don't really see this being a negative in any way for Manny Pacquiao and his brand.
Moving on, and kind of a feel-good story, Ross Pearson moved away from the sport on his own right.
Probably
coming off a loss, the loss to Desmond Green. Finally, Desmond Green getting a finish win. But
yeah.
Ross finally, hanging him up and possibility. I think he's leaving the door open to maybe compete in some aspect. You kind of have to wonder, maybe
probably
bare knuckle.
I know,
but
it's sad. Like, I hate to say it like this, but it's not a positive thing. Like, there's some fighters we've seen, guys like GSP, guys like Michael Bisping. There's some fighters who, when they retire from fighting, they have other avenues to make money that doesn't require brain trauma. Rico Verhoeven, a phenomenal kickboxer. He's in movies now. He does voiceovers. He's a really big star in Europe. It's really good when you can see guys who they've had to fight really hard their whole life, which is the hardest way to make money anyways. And now that they're doing something that doesn't require so much work outside.
And another Rico that I'll mention, Rico Rodriguez, the guy's still competing. Like,
that's
one of those
one.
Stories. Yeah,
exactly.
Sad. But Ross Pearson leaving on, his own way. And
he was 1-5 in his last six. It wasn't a great... It would have been nice if he had retired early, but it is good that he did retire on his own choice, like you would say.
Exactly. And another kind of feel-good story, Valentina Shevchenko in Kyrgyzstan.
Got mauled.
People freaking love her. I saw her get out of a car, and there were just mobs of people.
Oh,
so
you were like, I was walking down the street and saw Valentina Shevchenko.
I just wonder what, what do they think of Antonina? But Valentina getting the shine, and the Kyrgyzstanians really liking Valentina Shevchenko.
I mean, good for her. It's always great when you can have an MMA fighter as kind of their country's big star. Again, in Canada, hockey's kind of king here. But there was a few years when GSP was in his prime where you couldn't go into a sport check, you couldn't watch TV without him being on a commercial. Everyone kind of knew who he was. He was Canadian Athlete of the Year a few times. So it's always nice when you can have a country's biggest star being an MMA fighter.
Exactly. So great for Valentina Shevchenko, great for the UFC, great for women's MMA. This is a really good thing.
She's fighting Jessica I forget on which pay-per-view, but it is official.
Yeah, it is coming up very shortly. And another fight that was recently announced, and you had, of course, the big press conference today in New York. Dylan Danis was there dressed up like Cyclops. Heather Hardy's got a fight coming up. But Chael Sonnen taking on Lyoto Machida, June 14th from MSG. A fight that is really silly that it's going to happen.
Tough one for old Chael.
Lyoto Machida is going to run a truck through Chael Sonnen.
Okay.
And it's just ridiculous because Chael has that great job with ESPN. He's such a good commentator,
and
man.
Chael can win this fight if he makes it insanely boring.
We get a picture of him right there.
Big Chael fans. But yeah, Lyoto... There's two different kinds of MMA veterans. There's ones that have a lot of experience and they're still good, and then there's some that, again, they have different avenues. Why not go for those? Lyoto's still a pretty good fighter, and yeah, like Craig said, Chael's just not that fast on the feet. Machida's lightning.
I will say, I mean, Lyoto Machida in his last fight against Rafael Carvalho Jr., I had Carvalho winning the fight. I thought it was so silly that Machida lost. He broke his nose in that fight. However, he did look good in that fight.
Exactly. He was competitive with the former champion as of like 5 months ago. So
yeah, exactly. So a good fight there for Machida. And yeah, I mean, I am looking forward to this fight. And another fight that was recently announced, I know Marcel Dorf, giving him credit, as well as Ariel Helwani, I just couldn't find the picture, yeah. But Marcel does a great job on Twitter, so be sure to follow him at BigMarcel24. He does great work, and announcing that Michael Chiesa is going to be taking on the Nightmare, the Dream, the Lionheart.
What? He's got many nicknames.
Diego Sanchez, and Diego Sanchez, man, like...
Not a terrible fight for Diego Sanchez, just due to the fact that Michael Chiesa...
You're not going
to
get hurt.
Exactly. Chiesa has good stand-up. He's not a big power guy by any means, and Diego Sanchez does well against straight jiu-jitsu guys, so it's not the worst fight for him. All that being said, I think he's going to get strangled. But yeah, not a bad fight. I mean, it is a fun one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a half-decent one at 170. Chiesa, if he's able to get a win, might be able to move up a little bit. And then the biggest news, we saved it for last, which you should never do.
Too. It just came out, really.
So today it was announced that by USADA, and ESPN SportsCenter really broke it down, but USADA suspended TJ Dillashaw for 2 years because he took EPO.
And that's a real steroid, guys.
You're not aware what EPO is. Yeah, it affects your red blood cells, and yeah. It's made for cheating.
Some of you guys might have seen the documentary Icarus. It was on Netflix. It's a phenomenal documentary. If you haven't seen it, really go watch it. It's great. It's about doping and cycling, and EPO is one of the big drugs that they cover. Basically, these guys take so much EPO, and it helps their cardio so much, and their red blood cell count goes so high that their blood becomes thick like syrup.
The crux of the movie. EPO, some steroids, some testosterone, and then everybody's favorite picograms, turinabol.
But yeah, basically what EPO does is it makes your blood thick with red blood cells. It gives you insane cardio, pretty much. And these guys, it's so unhealthy for you. This is how bad of a steroid it is, how many negative effects it can have on your body. These cyclists would wake up in the middle of the night, and their blood pressure would be so high, and they'd be sweating so bad that they would have to exercise like a maniac just to get some sort of normality back to their blood. Like Craig said, it's a real steroid. This ain't no picograms. This isn't nothing. This is no walk in the park. If you're taking EPO, you mean business. And yeah, it does actually help you too. Like, there's so many benefits.
I was one of the people that, I'm not saying a fan, but the body of work that Dillashaw put in, it was a lot of fun to watch those fights. Now I question it. Like, man, you cheated. I don't care if it was due to the weight cut to get to 125.
Still took EPO.
You straight up cheated. You got a 2-year USADA suspension. I'm pretty black and white when it comes to these steroid things or doping scandals, whatever you want to call it. I'm like that. This really tarnishes his whole title reign. Yeah. Even if it was for one fight, why?
Very loud right now.
Like, why?
Well, because you want to do whatever it takes to get to the next level, you know, like professional athletes do. But how crazy is this basically? TJ, you almost died the day before a fight. You cut so much weight just to get knocked out in 20 seconds and then fail for a steroid and lose 2 years off your career. And TJ's not that young either. I think he's like 34, maybe 33, yep. 34. 2 years, not saying 36, you're done, but at a lighter weight class like that, those 2 years are tough on you. We're probably going to see Dominic Cruz fight before TJ Dillashaw.
The only logical fight I see for TJ, because now weight cutting might become an issue, even with 2 years off.
No, he'd still make 135.
I think he should move up to 145 and fight a guy that's going to be close to his own age, probably a little bit older, in Rani Yahya. So, challenge has been extended. Book the fight for 2 years from now.
Ronnie fights at 135, though.
I want to see Rani Yahya. Yeah, but Ronnie's going to be further off in his career. Book it at 145. TJ gets a win and then moves right up. But I want to see TJ and Rani Yahya book that fight.
I was on board with the whole black and white USADA stuff, but now you're just talking nonsense.
Nonsense, and that's the end of the Twitter purge. All right, so now it's time for everybody's favorite part, the end of the show. No, we're going to give you our highlights and our lowlights from this week. So if we start with the lowlights, it's really, really difficult for me because there's so many different lowlights. I'm going with Dave Feldman's comments at BKFC5. I mean, straight up, you can't do that.
No.
There are
super illegal.
There are heads of major organizations that say, you know, just preposterous things. Dana White says weird things. Scott Coker will come out and say...
They never threatened to take half a guy's money and give it to the
other guy. Scott Coker might say some crazy things, whatever. Scott's not even that bad about saying crazy things. Either way, you can't say you're going to take away 50% of somebody's purse.
And again, that's not...
Go back and watch the damn tape. And then he comes out and says, oh, well, I only said it because I wanted to rile him up. And then... after the main event, he said, well, yeah, that was because of what I said. No, it wasn't. Those guys had bad blood. And listen, Artem Lobov and Jason Knight went back and forth on Twitter in a good way.
But they would have fought tough no matter
what. Yeah, they would have. That's just the way that they fight. And you already had Artem, who basically needed a win to lock in that Pauly fight, which is huge. So
isn't that huge? If I'm being completely honest, how many people are all that hyped up for Artem Lobov versus Pauly Malignaggi?
I mean, I'm hyped for it. But still, my lowlight, Dave Feldman, you can't say that. Yeah. And listen, he probably learned his lesson. I hope he does, but that's my lowlight.
My low light, we just talked about it, it's pretty obvious. TJ Dillashaw popping for EPO, losing 2 years of his career. Many people consider him to be the best bantamweight of all time, especially in the UFC. Now his whole legacy is pretty much tarnished. And like you said, maybe he only took it for this one fight. I did read a lot of people saying that he might have used it for the rehydration process. You can't be doing that nonsense. So yeah, that's my low light of the week.
So yeah, low lights, all sorts of low lights. If we have a look at highlights, Matt, what is your highlight of the week?
So my highlight, it's kind of a low light for one guy, but it's definitely a highlight for another guy. So Yoel Romero or Paulo Costa, basically Jacare didn't have an opponent for UFC Miami, but Jack Hermanson, again, a guy we've been kind of pumping up for the longest time now. He got that really nice win over David Branch in, what, 58 seconds, I want to say. He had that kind of modified guillotine. He's getting the chance to fight Jacare Souza. It's a great fight. Yes, Jacare is going to be a big favorite. Of course he is, because he's way better at striking and everything that Hermanson does. Couldn't think of his name, even though I'm a big fan. Everything Hermanson does, Jacare does a little bit better. But just for a guy who's finally kind of getting that big push, he's going to be a main event against a guy like Jacare. It's a really good sign.
And for me, my highlight of the week, and I'm going to kind of throw a curveball into this one, and it's not because we just had him on the show, but Gary Tonin signing a new fight deal with ONE Championship.
Won't tell anyone what it is, though.
Of course, you got ONE Championship coming up this weekend. Martin Wynn in that main event. Looking forward to that fight. But Gary Tonin, a guy who said to us, you know, if I get a win over Anglin, maybe I get a title shot. I think Gary Tonin's really, really close to one at this point. And he's looked great. Like, man, the complete package. I can't sell him enough to you. So that's my highlight, and look forward to more of Gary Tonin. An honorable mention would be, of course, Ross Pearson stepping away, own volition. So congrats to him. Wish him nothing but the best in retirement. Of course, his wife is one of the ring girls you see on occasion with the UFC. But
so Ross is the real winner.
Great for him, and I mean, just really looking forward to the weekend that is in combat sports. Of course, UFC 236 coming up on Saturday. I'm going to be on a flight from old Toronto to Regina.
I'll be tweeting about it, though.
Matt's going to be tweeting about my flight. About the fights. But really looking forward to it. We're going to have more episodes of This Week in MMA and different things with Fight Night Picks. Of course, I mentioned it earlier, I'm not going to be able to make it out to NEF coming up in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to fancy old Oklahoma. So looking forward to that trip. But yeah, lots of stuff going on. You can find us fightnightpicks.net for articles, podcast episodes, YouTube episodes, sports companion things, everything. And if you've ever thought of joining Fight Night Picks, not even with merch, if you're interested in writing for the
site, team,
doing podcasts, different things, be sure to reach out to me.
It's a revolution, guys.
You can on there. We're having a lot of fun with these episodes. We're changing things up every time. And hopefully you like those changes. So be sure.